All right, I think we're on. All right, welcome everybody to Hebrew Club, Moedon Ivrit. It's great to see everybody here. I've been on hiatus for a year working on my Psalms commentary. And come on in, sorry. They probably will edit anything, but we get some more chairs here. Someone could help. So I'm really happy to have everybody here. And we're going to go through the book of Micah this year. And we always go, I just want to tell you guys, this is just very relaxed, very informal. So we start, you know, around noon. And some of you guys have 12:30 classes. Just feel free to get up at 20 after, 25 after. I usually stop. So we're talking about a 25-minute commitment. And basically, I will read and translate, say a few comments about the verbs, and then or whatever, syntactic structures, just to get us in the Hebrew. If you guys have any questions, feel free to ask. No question is too dumb about any form, anything, you know. I'll try to answer it as best I can. You guys can just sit here silently and not do anything. I'm just happy to have you here. But feel free to participate in whatever way you guys want to, okay? The only person I'll ask questions of is Will, of course. I won't do that. So, we're going to start, like I said, with Micah, and it's a really interesting prophecy. As we go through it, I think you'll get a lot out of it because of the content. Also, a lot of the forms you're going to find very interesting, and some new stuff, or stuff that you're not as familiar with as we go through it. Of course, Micah is an 8th century prophet. So he prophesied, you know, probably from 742 through around 715, roughly that era, a younger contemporary of Isaiah. Remember, you got Hosea, Isaiah, Amos, and Micah are the four chief 8th century prophets, okay? So, of course, the Assyrian threat is big in this century. So he's about 100 years away from Babylon and the fall of Babylon, all those kinds of things. And he'll set the stage in verse 1. So I'm going to read it, translate it, say very little about it, move on. I'm going to try to cover usually anywhere between 8 to 10 verses, maybe a little less than that with the prophets. We'll see. Moving from narrative, I thought that'd be a nice change of pace. So verse 1, Devar Adonai Asher Haya El Mika Hamorashti Bimeyotam Achaz Yechizkiyah Malke Yehuda Asher Chaza Al Shomron Virushalayim. The word of the Lord which was Haya. All right, this is kind of not all that uncommon. In Greek, it's kind of like ginomai. You could translate it came, and a lot of translations do that. So the word of the Lord which came or was to Micah the Morashti. Notice the gentilic ending on Morashti. I mean that Hirik Yud ending, the E ending, very similar to the I-A-N. We're an American or Canadian. All right, so that's if you're from Morasheth, you're going to see this kind of ending in Hebrew for that kind of word. Morasheth was somewhere like 25 miles southwest of Jerusalem, so he's kind of a southern prophet, all right? And some say that the reason he's identified with this, because if you're in Jerusalem, see, if you're actually speaking in Jerusalem, people are going to refer to you by the place you're from. So that's why it's suggested that he's delivering at least some of his prophecy in Jerusalem, okay? Bimei, in the days of, notice that that's from Yamim, the plural of Yom construct, in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, kings of Judah, okay? Now notice he starts out again, Asher Chaza, which he saw. Notice that this clause syntactically is parallel to the Asher Haya in the first part. So he kind of reiterates or elaborates. So the word of the Lord, which was to Micah, and now he rewords what he said, his experience, so to speak, which Chaza, he saw. All right. Now, does that mean that there was a vision that he saw? Maybe. Does it mean he saw kind of in his mind's eye? You know, we use the word see in a looser sense. A prophet, the Navi, was also called a Choseh, prophet, and a Ro'i, remember? Ro'eh, a seer. So, again, the nature of his experience, he doesn't really share with us. But notice he characterizes as the Devar Yahweh, the word of the Lord came to him, okay? Which he saw, now you have Al Shomron, over Samaria or concerning Samaria in the north, the capital of the north, remember, Virushalayim and Jerusalem. All right? Any questions about verse 1? All right, let's go to verse 2. Shimu amin kulam hak shivi eretz u meloa. Vihi Adonai Yahweh bakem le'ed Adonai me hekal kodsho. Notice it starts off with a simple call imperative from Shama. Hear, O people. People is vocative. Kulam. I want you to notice this construction. Hear, O people, all of them. Notice that that's kol with the third masculine plural suffix. You would expect that it would say, hear, O people, all of you. All right? Instead, it switches from second person to third person. It does the same thing you will see in the next colon, and it's not that unusual in prophetic address to see this kind of switch. It sounds really weird to us, and I'm not sure what the force of it is or anything like that. It's just that it happens more than here. You'll see that happening in the Psalms all the time, where you have this switch. He's talking second person, all of a sudden you end in a third person switch. Sometimes I think it's a structuring device, but I'm not sure what it is here. So hear, O people, all of them. Most translations will always say all of you, just so you know. Hakshivi, that's a hifil imperative from kashav, all right? And it is a feminine singular, hifil. Okay, it means pay attention, hakshivi, all right? O earth, notice it's feminine because eretz, feminine, O earth. And meloah, her fullness. Again, notice the switch to her, third feminine singular suffix there from melo. All right. Again, male is the verb that means to be full. Here you have the noun melo, fullness. All right. So hear, people, all of you, give ear, O earth, and its fullness. Vihi, notice that that's a vav plus a shortened imperfect from haya. So if you didn't have the vav there and wrote out a full imperfect, it'd be yeh, yeh. Okay? But here it's shortened, and so a lot of people translate it as adjusive. Okay? And following the imperative, two imperatives in the former line, so that Adonai Yahweh might be Ba-Kem, against you, Le'ed, as a witness. So notice how I'm translating the prepositions there. And again, I'm translating Ba-Kem against you simply because of the context. All right? I mean, in different contexts, prepositions are very flexible in the kind of English translation and interpretation we're going to give them. So that Adonai Yahweh might be against you as a witness, and you'll see why it's against in a second. Adonai may hekal kodsho. Okay, literally or woodenly, this is from the temple of his holiness. Kodesh is a noun. But in Hebrew, remember, a lot of times the genitive construct relationship, you will that second word, the genitive, will have this kind of adjectival function. All right. So whenever you see a construct, you want to ask yourself, what's the relationship between those two words? Because it varies, and then you're going to want to translate accordingly. So notice I'm saying his holy temple, very common phrase in the prophets and in the Psalms. Notice, too, that it's ambiguous to what it's referring to. Could be referring to the temple in Jerusalem, right? The earthly temple. But remember also, that temple is a model or type of the heavenly. That's why in the Bible the Ark of God is referred to as both the footstool of Yahweh and the throne of Yahweh. Notice that in Isaiah 6, it's kind of ambiguous. Is Isaiah's experience taking place in the earthly tabernacle temple or in the heavenly one? Because the significance of that temple was, as Yahweh really present there, it was ambiguous between this world and the heavenly. See, time and space were kind of suspended there. It's really fascinating when you see that. All right. Now, when you see the context, you know, that kind of ambiguity is really interesting. So Yahweh was present with his people, and now is he coming out against them as a witness? Notice they're both true in a sense. The transcendent Yahweh is always also immanent with his people. Okay. Questions through verse 2 of any construction? You guys all good?
It seems interesting that yes. They put Adonai after Yahweh.
Or before Yahweh?
Oh, well, they have Yahweh in one clause, and then the next one they have Adonai.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see that kind of use of names for Yahweh and labels for Yahweh that can vary from book to book, author to author. Yeah, good.
You said this, but what is the exact construction of Vihi, the beginning? Like,
okay, that's...
Did you kind of put a subjunctive force in that, or so that?
Yes, okay, good. Yeah, that's a good question. Notice that that's a shortened imperfect form from Haya. All right? And following these imperatives, when you have a Vav plus a form like this, an imperfect or a shortened imperfect, it has kind of a... The force is, do this so that... So you'll see some translations that say, hear, give ear, so that Adonai Yahweh might be against you as a witness. In other words, listen up. Why? So that Yahweh can say what he's going to say. Some translations give it a full imperfect force, and Yahweh will be against you as a witness. All right, and they suggest that it's shortened, like Gazanius, I think, suggests it's shortened for other reasons, metrical reasons or rhythm reasons. And he gives other examples of where that happens as well. Good question. All right. Okay, verse 3. Ki hine Adonai yotze mimekomo veyarad vederak al bamate eretz. For look, now notice the key is almost like functioning as a focus particle here. In other words, he's telling you as a reader what I'm saying, concentrate on what I'm saying. And notice hine is usually a visual perception, either see visually or, but you can also see in the mind's eye, all right? And that's why it's often translated look. So if you're going to translate in English, you might put look in italics or something like that. Kihine. So it's kind of like a focus on what I'm going to say. Yahweh Yotze, notice that that's a call participle, is coming out from his place. So I'm translating it as a present progressive, is coming out, because I want to describe the scene as if he is describing it as he's seeing it. You know, like I would say, hey, look, Fred's coming out the door. So it's kind of like he's taking us to what Yahweh has revealed to him, okay? And so that's why I'm giving that participle that progressive force. So look, Yahweh is coming from his place. Ve'yarad ve'darak. Notice vav plus perfect, vav plus perfect. And he will come down from yarad, and he will trample on the bamate aretz, on the high places of the earth. That bamate is from bama, means high place, and it's a, this is a strange spelling. Notice the Masoretes don't want you to read that bamote, but bamate, they shorten it, and it's a plural construct, the high places of the earth. Okay, let me do verse, yeah, okay. Any questions?
So Bob is acting as a vowel there?
So the vav there, that's the difference between the Karei Kativ readings. The Masoretic text, the text has that O there. So if you were reading the consonants, it'd be ba-mo-te. But this particular word, they don't want you to read the ba-mo-te. They want to shorten that vowel. So the vav, it stays there, but they want you to read that vowel point, that hatef kamatz, ba-mo-te, ba-mo, it's shorter. Okay, it's kind of a technical point. Okay? Good. Verse 4. Venamasu heharim tachtav vehaamakim yit baka'u kadonag mibnehaesh kemaim mugarim bemorad. Here's some interesting forms you're going to get here. Venamasu. Okay, look at that form. That is a from the root masas, masas, to melt. All All right. This is a Niphal form from Masas. Now you notice that the root letter is doubled because of the hirik preceded by the short vowel. Whenever you see a hirik preceded by a short vowel, you want to think assimilated letter. Usually a nun, but in these double lines, you'll see that when you add a vocalic ending all the time. And it has a intransitive meaning, an intransitive meaning. And the mountains will melt, tachtav, beneath him or under him. Veha amakim, and the valleys, yit baka'u. Okay, this is a hitpael from baka. Everybody see that? Hitpael from baka. All right. And it means to burst or to break up. All right. In the call form, it means to cleave, to cut something. Hifil, to cut something. So notice what you're going to get through this form is a lot of passives and reflectives. That's what's interesting about this section. All right. So the mountains will melt under him and the valleys will burst. Or break, okay? Ka noag, as wax mipnei ha'esh, as wax before the fire. Kemaim, as water, mugarim. There's a word for you. This is one not for your flashcards. It's from the root nagar. Nagar means to flow. No call for this, actually. It just starts in the nifal. This is, okay. This is a hafal participle. Not very common in the whole scheme of things. Notice that you know the root. If you just remember, hirik, dagish in the letter, in the gimel, preceded by a short vowel tells you there's an assimilated letter. When you see it at the beginning of a word, that's usually a nun. Not always, but usually. So the nun has assimilated. And with these hafal forms, notice you have a kibbutz. Sometimes you get the whole holam written, all right, shurig. And it means to flow as water, mugarim, flowing on a morad, on a slope. Notice the root behind morad is yarad, to go down. See the root in the verb at verse 3, ve-yarad, and now be-morad. Right, and so it gets a little tricky in through there, but you can make your way through it if you're just kind of patient and take your little logos cursor and put it over Namasu, and then at least you know, okay, at least I know the root, then I can capture it. Yes?
Going back to Baka,
yes.
And then our fun form there, how the hay doesn't appear in this form, or how come there's
okay.
No dagesh lini in the tent?
Okay, because this is a hit pael, and the root is baka, and it's an imperfect form. So it's yit, like hit, hit katel, yit katel, yit katelu. And remember, so you're going to get following the silent, the yit, you get the dagesh in the bait, okay? And then the kaf, because it's a doubled root letter, you know, it's that intensive, reflexive of the PL form. You guys are asking technical questions. Very interesting. Yes?
Here's an easy one then. Going back to 3, why is arts dropped down a line?
Because the editors, notice how this is a printed text, and the editors can't fit it all in one line. So the editors will either go below or above that line. That's all. That's the only reason it is.
Okay.
Okay? They're just trying to mess with you. All right. Verse 5. Bepesha Yaakov kolzot, uvechatot Beit Yisrael mi pesha Yaakov halo Shomron, u mi bamot Yehuda halo Yerushalayim. Okay, bepesha. Here you see the pesha simply means transgression, and the Beit is the preposition. And notice it's answering. It's continuing the thought of verse 4. All these things are going to happen to the created world. Why? Bepesha. Because of the transgression of Jacob is all this. Notice zot is feminine. Because when something is referred to in the general sense, or an event is referred to, notice it's referring to the whole kind of event in the previous verse. It uses the Hebrew custom is to use the feminine zot rather than zeh. That's why it's feminine, because it's referring to this kind of whole event. All right. So on account of the transgression of Jacob is all this. And on account of the chatot, the sins of the house of Israel. Okay. Mi pesh Yaakov, what is the transgression of Jacob? Halo Shomron. Is it not Samaria? Namely the capital. This is really powerful rhetoric. See, so what's the transgression of Jacob? Is it not Samaria? So he's kind of indicting the whole capital for its pagan praxis, its idolatry. And what is the Bamot, or what are the high places of Judah? Is it not Jerusalem? Holy Kai strikes right there. So notice how he equates Samaria and Jerusalem, puts them both together right away. And hence what we saw in verse 1, this is a prophecy that concerns both Samaria and Jerusalem, both the north and the south.
Why did it mention Jacob here, not like Israel?
Yeah, again, the interchange of names. Sometimes Jacob is used to refer to just the north. Sometimes all of the both north and south. And so, in Micah, it's very interesting, kind of the usage here. He refers to Israel in the previous verse, and you'd think he'd use it now, but now he substitutes Jacob. And remember, Jacob, there may be a theological reason to remind everybody that Israel's part of the people, a covenant people, because it was Jacob with whom he made the covenant. So it's kind of just one of those reminders that Micah is making use of. But a lot of, actually, commentators have kind of looked at how Micah is referring to Israel and Judah back and forth here. Good. Any other questions?
How did you first Bamot?
Okay, just high places.
Okay.
What are the high places of Judah? Okay. Verse 6. V'samti shomron le'i hasadeh le'mata'e kerem ve'higarti lagai avaneha Visodeha agale, and I will put or place. This is from seem. Notice a hollow verb, perfect first common singular, vav, and I will. But here, I'm going to translate, I will make. Whenever you have seem and then a lamed, which is following it, you can translate it like that. And I will make Samaria into a he, into e hasada, into the heap of the field. And what it's talking about, heap of the field, remember when you take clear a field of stones, the stones are going to make heaps, and they probably had those all over to mark the boundaries of the fields and all of that. So that's what he's referring to. And I will make Samaria into the heap of the field. Now he does it again, into the planting of the vineyard. Okay, so mata, notice that word. Mata'e is from the root nata. Again, notice the dog is preceded by a short vowel to plant. A lot of times in Hebrew, as you guys know, when you're going to change, when you want to make a noun in Hebrew, they will simply take the root and add a mem to it, sometimes a bet, but commonly a mem. So this is simple noun formed on that root nata. All right. Vehigarti. Here's that root nagar again. Remember, we saw it in verse 4 with the mugarim as a hafal participle, all right? Here we see it as a hifil, perfect, and I will, all right? Pour, nagar, to pour out, and I will pour to the guy, to the valley, avaneha, her stones, from Evan, her stones, visodeha, and her foundations, Agale, I will reveal, lay bare. This is a PL form from Gala. All right, now it's, usually the PL form is used when you're talking about stripping the clothes from someone in a shameful way. So he uses the PL first common singular, Agale, I will make bare or lay bare. All right, we'll do one more verse here. Vekol pesaleha. Yukatu vekol et naneha yisarfu ba'esh vekol atzaveha asim shema'a. Well, we'll stop there, actually. and take it up. We're going to stop here because everybody has to go. So we will start with verse 7 next week. And thanks for coming, and thanks for the great questions, actually.
Yeah,
that was terrific. Yeah.